It's Tuesday, December 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President Obama confers with defense officials on the fight against Islamic State. Donald Trump leads in controversy and the polls heading into the next Republican presidential debate.
They took just 8. So that's an admission rate of 0.13%.
How hard is it to become a U.S. astronaut? Well, astronomically difficult. Also ahead, the big country music stars heading into the new year. It's all coming up on today's International Edition.
President Obama would...
President Barack Obama says the U.S.-led coalition is moving with a great sense of urgency, targeting Islamic State in Syria and Iraq, surgically and with precision to take out that group. He says the coalition is taking out Islamic State leaders, commanders, and killers one by one. Mr. Obama also said the Department of Homeland Security is updating its alert system to help the American people stay vigilant and safe. The president was briefed at the Pentagon by his national security team, and it's from there that we're joined by VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb with more on the president's meeting.
President Obama was basically speaking with his national security team, everybody from the Treasury Secretary, of course, Secretary of Defense Ash Carter, and others, to talk about the fight against the Islamic State, to see where it was going, what more needed to be done, and to basically assess what the United States had done so far. And he said that the United States is going to continue hunting down the leaders of the Islamic State, continue training and equipping our allies, stop with the Islamic State recruiting process, and also keep pushing diplomacy in Syria, because he stressed that that is how you get a solution against the Islamic State.
And the president mentioned that the United States is now hitting Islamic State harder than ever.
Yes, absolutely. He talked about all of the different areas that the Islamic State had lost, 40% of the populated areas it once controlled in Iraq, also thousands of kilometers in Syria. Just last week, Colonel Steve Warren was talking about another 1,000 kilometers lost near Al-Hol, which has been a deep battle area in Syria near the Iraqi border. So he said the United States is not going to stop, and in fact it's going to get stronger, and the coalition is going to get stronger. France, Germany, the United Kingdom, Australia, Italy, all of these countries are adding more to the fight, and that's also why Secretary of Defense Ash Carter is heading to the Middle East. He's wanting to get more contributions from Middle East partners to secure the fight against the Islamic State, with them taking the lead as well.
And that was one of the big announcements today, Ash Carter heading off to the Middle East.
Yes, he's going to be going to several different stops. They have not announced those yet, of course, because of the situation, the security situation in the Middle East. They probably will not be announced until he's there. But the goal, as President Obama said, is to secure more military contributions and also just talk with partners there and make sure that the United States is there because their allies want them there. And so there has to be constant communication between the United States and its Middle Eastern allies to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Was there any mention about some of the tensions going on between Russia and Turkey in this?
He did mention Russia. He didn't mention the tensions between Turkey and Russia, but he did say that Secretary Kerry is going to be in Russia to talk about the Vienna process to end the Syrian civil war.
Carla Babb is our Pentagon correspondent and monitoring all of the action that's happening over there. Carla, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's time for us to check out what's trending on social media with respect to our top story. G. Abby Lee is our social media guru, and I look to my right, and there's an empty seat. My goodness, we gave her the day off. Well, we did check what was happening on social media. The White House definitely there talking about President Obama's visit to the Pentagon to speak and meet with advisors on the battle against Islamic State in both Syria and Iraq. The official White House Twitter account posted, "Watch POTUS give an update on our fight against ISIL from the Pentagon," and they gave a link where you could actually go and see the video. Also, as the president spoke, an updated tweet was sent, quote, "We're talking about ISIL leaders, commanders, and killers, taking them out one by one," and that was signed by @POTUS. Also included a graphic illustrating what the White House and the Pentagon says has been accomplished so far in the fight. The U.S. and international allies have conducted more than 8,860 airstrikes against the group, and they broke it down with more than 5,800 in Iraq and more than 3,000 in Syria. In yet another tweet, in November, we dropped more bombs on ISIL targets than in any other month since this campaign started. That tweet accompanied by yet another infographic saying that the U.S. and the international community will defeat the group abroad by continuing military campaigns to hunt down terrorist plotters in any country necessary, providing training and equipment to Iraqi and Syrian forces fighting the Islamic State on the ground, stopping their operations by disrupting plots, cutting off financing, and preventing recruitment of more fighters. Interestingly, a well-known journalist here in Washington, Gwen Ifill of Public Broadcasting's NewsHour, picked up on Defense Secretary Ashton Carter's observation about Islamic State. She wrote on Twitter, SecDef Ash Carter calls ISIL our first every social media enemy. Social media has been a widely used tool by Islamic State to promote its ideology, primarily to recruit new followers. It has had success in that area, and of course it's a tool that the rest of the world opposed to it would like to counter, if not silence. Well, our Twitter account is always active. You can follow us at @VOA_IE. G. Abby Lee will be back with us in another day or so, but you can follow her at G. Abby Lee. I'm at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views, presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Republican presidential hopefuls gather again later Tuesday for yet another debate. Billionaire businessman Donald Trump continues to lead in the polls, as we find out more from VOA senior political correspondent Jim Malone, who joins us right here in the studio.
The Trump show continues. What will be interesting about debate number 5 in Las Vegas is we're seeing the rise now of a conservative challenger to Trump in the polls, and that would be Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Cruz is not only coming up in some of the national polls, getting closer to Trump, he's actually surging in the first state to vote, which is Iowa. And in one poll, the Des Moines Register poll, is up by 10 points over Trump, 31 to 21. That is somewhat significant. That particular poll gets a lot of credence in Iowa. And what we don't know is if Trump's facade is pierced in Iowa in that first vote of February 1st, how might that affect how the rest of the primary battles go for Donald Trump? Because at every campaign stop, he loves to boast that he's leading not only in the national polls, but in all the state polls. We now see the rise of Ted Cruz, something to watch for this debate.
Ted Cruz, after the last debate, talked about being on a parallel track toward the nomination where he was on the far right all by himself, and then there was everybody else kind of in the middle battling it out, and then they would kind of come to the very end, and he felt like he would be able to prevail.
And in order for him to prevail, though, he certainly does not want to offend Donald Trump or Ben Carson, another social conservative in the race who has a lot of religious followers. And in order to get the supporters from those two, according to Cruz, he will not attack them. He will not speak ill of them because he wants to inherit those supporters, assuming that somewhere along the line, both Trump and Carson falter. Well, the polls, the latest polls show that Carson may be faltering now. He's plummeted down in Iowa now to about fourth. He was leading just a couple of months ago. So what'll be interesting now is this dynamic where Cruz is starting to be attacked by Trump on the campaign trail. How will he respond? So far, he's not taking the bait. And again, he needs to be careful. He doesn't want to offend those Trump followers who so far have been pretty loyal to the Donald.
And the two were going back and forth quite a bit on social media through Twitter, taking jabs at each other. Donald Trump, for his comments, wanting to ban all Muslims coming into the United States, has taken an incredible amount of heat. Trump has alluded to the fact that, well, you know what? If you don't like me, I'll run as an independent.
Yeah, and that is a threat, once again, that hangs over the Republican Party. They realize it. I think some of them are concerned about it. But some of the establishment figures are equally concerned that Trump could wind up being the nominee and could lead to an easy Democratic victory in November of 2016. So, again, we have Trump playing this really interesting role, wielding a lot of influence right now. We don't know who's going to emerge from the pack of Republicans to be that one alternative. And I think this Tuesday debate will also illuminate some of the issues at play. Is it going to be someone like a Jeb Bush, who has not done well in the polls? Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, who's coming on in New Hampshire, according to the latest surveys? Marco Rubio, who many consider a strong potential contender for the mainstream mantle in the party? There are kind of separate battles here among the conservatives to see who's the king of that hill, and then the mainstream or establishment types to see who would emerge as the leader there.
Well, the clear front runner in political analysis is Jim Malone, VOA senior political correspondent. Jim, thanks for stopping by.
Anytime.
Well, today, the U.S. space agency NASA has begun accepting online applications for astronauts. How hard is it to become an astronaut? Well, that's the question I'm asking Stav Ziv, a Newsweek journalist who has compared getting into NASA with admission to an elite U.S. university, in this case, Stanford. Stav, how many astronaut prospects does NASA accept each time they open the door?
It varies from cycle to cycle. So we took, as an example, the most recent cycle. The applications came in between November 2011 and January 2012. And they had 6,113 people apply. They took just 8. So that's an admission rate of 0.13%. So very, very tiny.
You really have to stand out in that crowd to be accepted.
Absolutely. And it takes several rounds. They narrow it down multiple times. And sort of the people who are around toward the end will actually go to Houston to do a week-long set of sort of interviews and testing. Even from that group of about 100 or 120, the people who ultimately will be selected is very, very small.
I'm sure the selection process involves quite a bit of criteria. What are some of the things that NASA is looking for?
Some of the basic criteria that they talk about in their initial call has to do with, one of them is education. So, for example, you have to have studied one of several topics in your undergraduate career. So they're looking for a BA in engineering, biological science, physical science, computer science, or math. Then they're looking for either 3+ years of related experience or 1,000 hours of flight experience. So there are two different areas you could be applying from. And the last sort of basic piece of criteria is the ability to pass a long-duration space flight test, which has to do with sort of physical and medical characteristics.
Now, we're comparing this with getting into Stanford University, which, in the interest of full disclosure, you were a student there.
Yes.
What is Stanford looking for? How difficult is it to get into Stanford today?
Ooh. Well, the number that we were looking at was the admission rate for the class of 2018, and at that time they accepted 5.07% of students. This sort of topic of college admissions has been a hot topic in the recent years just because of how difficult it has been, and the numbers are sort of dropping, and how hard it is to predict where you're going to end up in that game, regardless of good grades or SATs or extracurriculars. It's still difficult to know what's going to happen. And that's similar to the NASA process. They reject at least as many good qualified candidates as they accept. So the numbers are just very low on both sides.
And I would imagine the numbers even lower for somebody who went to Stanford who was accepted by NASA.
I imagine that's the case. Actually, that's a good question. I think it'd be interesting to see what kind of overlap there is.
Well, Stav, I nominate you to go into space if you so elect to.
Oh, well, I did major in history, so I don't think that's going to be possible for me, but maybe for some other Stanford alums out there.
Stav Ziv is a reporter for Newsweek. Her article, Stanford Admittance Easy Compared to NASA Astronaut Program, is available online. You can check it out. Stav, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated 1/4 of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. 2/3 of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.
Which country songs and artists could get Grammy Awards next year? International Edition's Sarah Williams and Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong are here to tell us.
The Grammy nominations are out, and country music is abuzz about the surprises and potential winners, especially in some of the categories like Best Country Album, Best Country Solo Performance, and Best Country Duo Group Performance. Nikki Strong of VOA Music is here to fill us in on the nominations, give us some predictions, and share the responses of some of the contenders themselves. So, Nikki, who are some of the surprise nominees for Best Country Album?
Okay, so the nominees are Sam Hunt, Montevallo, Little Big Town, Painkiller, Ashley Monroe, The Blade, Kacey Musgraves, Pageant Material, and Chris Stapleton, Traveler. Now, there's no real surprises, per se, in terms of who got nominated. The hardest part of this category is seeing who will win, because all of the albums were great and popular among the critics. And even though Chris Stapleton is hot right now, we'll see how he fares up against Ashley Monroe and Kacey Musgraves, who will definitely give him a run for his money among Grammy voters. And I thought it was funny that Chris Stapleton said he was trying to watch the Grammy announcements on TV, but missed it because he was on the wrong channel, Sarah.
Oh, no.
He said he had to look it up online like so many of us did. Go figure.
Yeah. Well, what about Best Country Solo Performance?
Okay, so the nominees in this category include Cam, Burning House, Traveler by Chris Stapleton, Little Toy Guns by Carrie Underwood, John Cougar, John Deere, John 316 by Keith Urban, and chances are Leanne Womack. Now that everyone is abuzz about Chris Stapleton, Cam and Leanne Womack are the underdogs here, because Leanne's album is like what Chris Stapleton's was, the one that fans and critics loved but did not receive airplay. And Cam is a newcomer whose song Burning House is actually one of my personal favorites and is a top 10 hit on the charts. And Cam, which I thought was funny, she responded in disbelief. She just posted on Facebook, wait, will you guys double check this? Am I actually nominated for a Grammy? So I'm personally rooting for Leanne or Chris Stapleton, but I would be equally ecstatic if Cam actually won.
Well, tell us about the Best Country Duo Group Performance category.
Okay, so the nominees are Stay a Little Longer by Brothers Osborne, If I Needed You, Joey and Rory, The Driver, Charles Kelly, Dierks Bentley and Eric Paisley, Girl Crush, Little Big Town, and Lonely Tonight, Blake Shelton and Ashley Monroe. The big surprise here was Joey and Rory, If I Needed You. It's a touching song about the arrival of their newborn last year. The entire year has been very emotional for these two as they have been blogging and documenting Rory's bout with terminal cancer. Currently, they have decided to stop all treatment, and she is in hospice. So everyone connected to country music has been rallying around them and keeping them in prayer. So it was a precious surprise to them. Joey, wrote on Facebook, "Woke my bride up this morning with a baby in my arms and the news that our version of If I Needed You was nominated for a Grammy. As her excitement and tears flowed into mine, she said, 'How can that be?' The song received no airplay, no press, no critical acclaim, and the only music video we made for it was to celebrate the day our little Indiana was born. God is so good. Thank you, thank you, thank you." And even though If I Needed You is a beautiful, touching song, many predict that the commercial success of Little Big Town's Girl Crush will result in their winning the actual award. And Little Big Town, by the way, is up for 4 nominations overall, along with Chris Stapleton. And they posted that they were thrilled to represent country music at the Grammys, especially in the all-genre category Song of the Year for Girl Crush.
You can hear the music of these country Grammy nominees and more on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki Strong on Facebook and Twitter at I Am Nikki Strong or through VOA Music on Facebook and at VOA _ Music on Twitter. Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you.
I got a girl crush. Hate to admit it, but I got slowing down. I got it real bad.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website any time of the day or night that you like. That's voanews.com. We're also on Twitter. Follow us at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, our engineer, the world-renowned Zainab Abdel-Rahman. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We thank you so much for joining us and look forward to the next time that we can get together. Have a super day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Speaking at the Saban Forum in Washington, Secretary of State John Kerry said the focus of U.S. policy in the Middle East is to help ensure that the builders and the healers throughout the region have the chance that they need to accomplish their tasks. Among key issues, Mr. Kerry pointed to progress being made toward a political solution to the Syrian war, which, if successful, would make possible a stronger and more unified assault on Daesh and other violent extremists. He also highlighted the critical need for Israeli and Palestinian leaders to break the current impasse and focus on working through the difficulties hindering the only viable option for peace between the Israeli and Palestinian peoples, a two-state solution that can afford security and prosperity for both. The United States, said Mr. Kerry, will be with them every step of the way to support them in that effort. Additionally, for the builders in the region to have the opportunity to succeed, it is imperative, Secretary Kerry said, that they be shielded as much as possible from the sources of imminent and potential danger. That is why the nuclear deal agreed to by the European Union, the P5+1 countries, and Iran is so important. 2 years ago, when formal negotiations with Iran began, Iran had 19,000 centrifuges, it had a stockpile of enriched uranium, and it was building a heavy water reactor able to produce enough weapons-grade plutonium for a bomb. If it chose to, Secretary Kerry said, Iran could obtain all of the fissile material needed for a nuclear weapon in as little as 2 months.
Under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, every single one of Iran's pathways to a bomb is blocked. Its uranium pathway, its plutonium pathway, its covert pathway. And because of the unprecedented monitoring and verification requirements that we negotiated, which are an integral part of this plan, we now have 25 years of day-to-day complete visibility on every ounce of uranium that is mined. We track it.
Secretary Kerry said the nuclear deal with Iran was considered on its own terms, not as part of speculation that Iran would make a shift in its destructive behavior in other areas. It was the right thing to do, he said, because any effort to roll back Iran's behavior is a lot easier if they don't have a nuclear weapon.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.